You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I remember walking around the court square sidewalk.
Joining me now is the architect of the Bluest Garage in Granbury, Texas, Admiral Michael Musselman. What's going on there?
It's not blue.
Dude, it's so... I don't know. I saw a lot of versions, so it depends what version of blue that you embrace in that shit, man.
It's not blue. It's... That lighting that I sent you the picture is bad. That's wrong lighting. I mean, it was shining right on it.
I know. All that does is illuminate the blue. Now,
this is what it looks like.
Oh, we're gonna...
This is dry... This is coats, so you can see the difference. There.
Show it to me. Let me see it.
This is not the same what you got.
Screen share. Let's go. I want to see it because I'm not happy about it. I just want you to know.
I just sent it to you.
I don't what text message. What? How are you communicating?
Yeah, text.
All right. Let me.
Just in my hand. And then so you sent me like this whole blue thing, and I said. Hey,
no, that's what you sent to me. I just cropped it.
What about our blues that aren't blue? They're salty dog blue.
They're not. Now, see, that's different. See, the square that I sent you above is just a crop section of what you sent me.
Yeah, but when I'm looking at that now, that was when it was still wet and the light was like glistening off of it.
Okay. I'll approve what I'm looking at here. I will not approve that other stuff, the blue tile.
No, that looks crazy.
Yeah, that looks like you're trying to replicate the blue tile on the Constellation.
You know, you're right. I think I know what you're talking about now. But you were talking about blue, so I was sending like, oh, still, how about this? Too blue? Salty dog blue was what Betsy Ross had to work with.
That wasn't salty dog blue. That was American blue. That's right.
That's called Salty Dog.
No, it is not called Salty Dog Blue. Salty Dog Blue is some like rustic, antique-y kind of weird thing.
And if you were an old salt, you would know. See, like an old salt, you would know that our blues were always referred to as Salty Dog Blues.
Never. If you refer to somebody as Salty Dog, right? Normally, what's coming after that is not complimentary.
Like calling them. Like calling a senior staff and say, hey, devil dog, hey, you devil somebody.
Hey, salty dog. I love the devil dog, Sergeant Majors. Because because the way the Marine Corps uniform is constructed, the MARPAT, so you get this guy walking at you with all these chevrons and rockers and something.
You don't know what rank
you have no. So I would give him, like, what's up, motivator?
Hey, devil dog. Ah, sir. Hey. Ah. I'm not a devil dog.
Hey, hard charger, what's going on?
All devil dogs.
Well, good. It doesn't matter because I can't read your rank and I'm not guessing, so fuck it. And they'd laugh. They're like, I know. So I get called everything in the book. I get called.
Oh, no. I used to get like the really kind of like, hey, please don't call me devil dog again. I used to love it, man.
I did too. I thought it was hilarious.
I'd be like, what do you mean? We're all devil dogs.
We are.
I'm a devil dog.
I'm
You're
a devil dog. You're a devil. When did it get to
but
be a bad
devil dog
thing?
I'd be the same way.
When did it get to be a bad thing to be a devil dog?
Well, when you devil dog somebody, that's different.
What do you mean? What's wrong with that? That was like a...
It's like if we refer to, like, hey, we're all devil dogs. Yeah. But when you devil dog an individual, like, hey, devil dog, that's...
What's that?
Man, what's you're that? Crossing the line.
No, you're not. Are you kidding me? It's like, hey,
dude,
Marine.
I'm telling you, when you ask people, you don't know this. This is an enlisted thing.
That's a bullshit thing right there.
No, that is like a pet peeve of the enlisted. They do not like to be devil dogged.
They're the ones that did it. I didn't do it. No, they're the ones that would do it.
You can refer to them as a group, as a whole, as a bunch of devil dogs. Like, if you're speaking at the platoon, you're like, all right, devil dogs, listen up. And they're all like, yeah.
Oh,
but
man,
when you go, hey,
like,
come here, devil dog.
This is insanity, okay? This is why, and you wonder why people hate people. It's shit like this, right? Devil Dog.
Nope.
Bellu Wood.
I didn't make it up.
This kind of fucking craziness is why people hate people. Okay?
But you know this is true, Mac.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
It's like, wait, how do you, like...
Someone's going to write you and go, Mac...
It's like crazy. Me. It's like me saying, hey, I don't want to be called Leatherneck. Why not?
No one calls you... But no. We're not talking Leatherneck.
What's wrong with Leatherneck?
Because no one refers to anybody as Leatherneck.
What's wrong? Hey, Jirene. I don't like Jirene. It's demeaning. Oh, fuck off.
Yeah, that's Devil Dog, man.
That's
don't
exactly.
Devil Dog somebody.
Go to hell with that shit, man. I hate that stuff.
I'm telling you.
I don't care. You know, because what it got linked to was, oh, it's satanic and all the rest of that shit, what, 5 years ago? That bullshit?
Well, that was the oorah.
Oh, my God.
Don't oorah me. Remember that guy?
No.
What? You don't remember oorah?
Yeah, I remember that.
No. Sar Major Ura.
No.
Oh, Lordy. And I said it kind of like he'd say it. Oh, Lordy.
No, I don't remember that guy, whoever he was.
Get your ass over here. I say, get your ass here. I'm Sar Major. I won't say his name, but.
He
was in 3-5. He was at ITB. ITS.
Not ringing a bell. I'm not a Dark Horse guy, man.
Yeah, he was the guy that outlawed the word oorah. Oorah will not, from this day forward, oorah will not be used, you know, because he thought it's a derogatory term, just like devil dog to somebody. Oh.
How did oorah?
Dude, it was... And it became like such a funny thing. Like even now, the Marines. When you tell the Marines, don't say oorah, they're like
oorah.
Yeah, oorah. I mean, oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Sergeant Major. Oorah. I mean, I'm sorry. You know, they just they think of every way to get that in there
because it's stupid, right? They know stupid.
And when he walked with the battalion commander, because the battalion commander thought it was stupid, so he didn't back the Sergeant Major.
Well, would? Come on.
Well, then he'd be walking with the Sergeant Major, and the troops would be like, "Hoorah, sir!" You know, and the Sergeant Major would be like,
"Come here!"
Write his name down. They'd call in the First Sergeant. First Sergeant, I want to see Jones, McNamara, Musselman, McConnell. And then you just line them up, you know. And your Devil Dog, get him. Come here, Devil Dog. He was that way, man. Oh, my God. If someone's listening and remembers his name, call in and say it, because I don't want to say it. Well, I will.
No. Hey, the names have been changed to protect the innocent, just like the FBI TV show.
Let's call him then.
No. We know enough about him. There is no, why do you want to do this? You want to do this.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right.
No, I've always thought that stuff is stupid, right? And Devil Dog, you know, like what's wrong with that? I heard that whole, oh, it's satanic. It's a, like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Devil Dog. Hey, come here, Devil Dog.
Kufelhunden.
Like, who thinks that's, like, bad?
Kufelhunden.
Exactly.
Who says that?
Come here, Leatherneck. Come here, Jirene.
Who says that, too?
I don't know.
Jirene, that's like Korean thing.
Somebody at the slop shoot says that.
You got to say it like, yeah, that's like a John Wayne. Come over here, Jirene.
No, you know, when I was interviewing that that PSC I interviewed from Iwo Jima, I asked him, he made a comment about he knew John Bazelon. And I said, you knew John Bazelon? He said, yeah, we used to drink beer at the slop shoot in Hawaii. And I was like, slop shoot? Like he dropped slop shoot on me. And I was like, whoa. He said, yeah, you know, we didn't have anywhere to go, and you could buy beer for a nickel, so we'd go down the slop shoot and hang out. And
that's almost like a movie quote.
It is. You know? But he did it in real life. That was.
I know, but I'd be like, I'd always be like, slop shoot? Now you got me like,
Well, that was a place, though. where they served the beer.
Yeah, I know. Now I'm like, slop shoot. I'm going to do some research. But no, they probably did have one.
No, yeah, that's where. And I said, well, what kind of guy was John Bazelon? He said, oh, he was bigger than life guy. He's one of Manila John. Are you kidding me? He didn't get that nickname for not being somebody. Let me tell you, the mayor of Manila, John Bazelon. He's a big Italian guy, big personality, you know, Medal of Honor guy. He was a legend, man, and everybody knew him. So it's cool. I mean, it's just like I never met anybody who like knew, you know, somebody like that personally. So really cool, really cool. The what else going on? Hey, there's a little bit of craziness going on in my hometown where you used to recruit, and that is, Sacramento. Police shot and killed about a year ago a kid named Stephen Clark. There was 911 calls, multiple to the Sacramento Police Department.
Yeah, I saw that.
Right.
I saw
it. Somebody's breaking windows, right? Cops roll in, sheriff's helicopter, right?
Helicopter sees this guy walking around the backyard, cops confront him, he pulls out a cell phone in a hostile manner, and they shoot him.
Right.
Then they turn off their body cams, which, you know, like, there's a whole, but see, we don't know the whole story.
Well, they just released, the DA released a story on Friday, Saturday.
Everything?
Well, yeah, the cops aren't being charged. The toxicology report of what was in his system? Hello? Here's what I, because I know you still, you know, you ride along and you do a lot of stuff with law enforcement. You know, like, what, I told the story of my nephew, right? They go to check on somebody's probation status because they didn't check in with their parole officer, right? They knock on the door, girl in the living room, there's nobody else here. Do you mind if we look around? No. Dude laying in bed in the back. They're not sure if that's the right guy. They're checking the bathroom to make sure nobody comes out of the bathroom, another bedroom. They said, hey, man, can you put your hands where we can see him? And he says no. And so now he won't get out of the bed. He won't put his hands where. So one officer pulls his weapon. My nephew is a wrestler and a football player. He's talking to the guy, and the guy is telling him to fuck off or whatever. So they're like, hey, man, we need to see your hands. And he's like, no. So my nephew jumps on him, right, on the bed. The dude's laying on the bed. The dude shoots a sawed-off shotgun between his legs. Mm-hmm. And they subdue the guy, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, now in this thing in Sacramento, it's the initial 911 call. They see the guy. They yell to him to stop. He runs. The next encounter is the helicopter sees him throw a brick through the window of an 89-year-old man who's watching TV. He throws a brick through a sliding door, and then he hops the fence. The cops encounter him, right, and they tell him, you know, put your hands up. He doesn't, and then he pulls something. And different things, the two cops have different statements. One thought he saw the glint of a weapon off some kind of a light. The other one thought it was a weapon. One of them yells gun, and they shoot. Now, my question is this. If you put those two stories together, what do we expect of our cops when we send them out there?
Well, what do we expect? We expect that they do their job.
So, I mean, what the hell do they have? Do they have to die making sure that my stupid cousin who's doing stupid stuff, who's on drugs, right? Do they have to die making sure that he doesn't try to harm himself? And I just don't understand. And then you have, so the DA comes out and says, yeah, we're not charging them.
And then the mayor comes back and says, this is murder, basically.
Yeah, the mayor comes and apologizes.
Right.
And it's like, and Mike and I talk about, Mike and I talk about what happens when the truth doesn't matter. And that's what's going on in Sacramento right now, is the truth doesn't matter. The truth of what those police officers did that night doesn't matter. Because what happened, again, how many times have we said this? If he stops and puts his hands up, nothing happens.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of, like, what-ifs in this one. You know, so I was talking, we were talking a couple days ago about a different kind of subject, but similar. We were talking about what's the most traumatic thing that a police officer goes through. Do you know what it is?
What's the most traumatic thing that a police officer goes through?
That he needs counseling and everything else on.
The times that he or she didn't act and something bad almost happened.
No, the taking of another human's life.
Oh, okay. That was easy.
Okay. What is the number one thing that's the most traumatic for a Marine in combat?
Seeing a friend die.
Yeah, seeing your friend die. Not where does taking a life rank in the Marine thing? Number four. It's number one in the police. Why? Well, there's a big reason for that. One, we don't teach our cops to kill people. We can't. Cops are taught to neutralize the threat and to safeguard community. They're kind of like, in the military aspect, in the military world, in the big picture, they're like the Coast Guard. You know, the Coast Guard does amazing things every day. Yeah. They protect the boundaries, the water-type boundaries. They save lives. They interdict to save lives. The last thing they like to do is kill somebody.
Right. I mean, think about just the mottos, to protect and serve, or no better friend, no worse enemy.
Yeah, so the police are out doing service. They're community service guys, armed community service. You know, so you look at how we train them. We train them to neutralize the threat. They never say the word kill. They can't. It's a liability issue. You know, shit, man. If someone, the DA got a hold of some cop saying kill, then it doesn't. They just hold on to that till one day he actually shot somebody, throw that up, and then he goes to jail for the rest of his life. But cops aren't trained to do that. Cops aren't trained to deal with that. And a lot of training doesn't go into that. There's scenarios, yes, but when they shoot somebody, boom, right? The last thing they do, like when we as Marines, you know, so we're engaged in a firefight and we're shooting a bad guy, and any machine gunner shoots at me, I turn and shoot to the chest of him. He stops and he kind of goes limp. I followed up with a couple more to make sure, you know, bam, bam, bam. No way. They can't, you know, I got to make sure that he is done, that I'm killing this guy. Yeah, we like to say neutralize and destroy, but we're killing. And we teach our Marines to kill.
Right.
And they're good at it.
Right.
And so when they do kill, they can handle that. They've been trained. They're good. So when they shoot somebody and they sit, and one of the arguments is, why didn't they do anything? You know, because where is their training involved? So they shot somebody. He's not moving. At what point do you approach now? Well, you and me, that's easy. As soon as I shoot him,
right,
I'm going to walk up to him.
Right.
And I'm going to have my gun on him. And if he moves again, I'll shoot him one more time.
Right.
But if he doesn't move, I'm now now I'm no better friend.
Right.
Just before, I was no worse enemy.
Right.
So now I'm no better friend. Now I'm administering, you know, aid to whoever this victim is. So I don't know where in the policy, where in the breakdown, and I've said this and I've done this, is at what point do you go? And so, you know, they could come back and say they don't know how many perpetrators are there. If there was another one, they have to secure the area. You know, that was the frustration involved in one of the things that I worked with the police is, like, get in there. The only exception they make in those type of things are active shooter drills. They will go in. But normally they have to wait. They quarantine, they isolate. Right. They, you know, they do a lot of things before they can actually move in. But in this case, I don't know where the breakdown was, but obviously it was within the policy of the department.
What do you mean? What happens if there was no breakdown?
What do you mean?
What breakdown are you talking about?
the breakdown of the time duration from the time this guy was shot until they started ministering aid.
Oh, is the guy in Sacramento?
Now remember, a cop knows no more first aid than the average Joe.
Right.
He can stop the bleeding. Some of them, I don't know if it's mandatory for all police to be CPR. I'm pretty sure it should be, if it isn't. But they don't carry, other than a tourniquet, and the tourniquet really is for them. You know, so I don't know where do you input the, you know, this type of thing. So had he had, well, this guy was shot multiple times.
Right.
20, and it comes down to, you know, I listened to the shooting too. That's just discipline, Mac. These are guys that have never been in a gunfight. I mean, it's like Marines that have never been in a gunfight. They emptied the whole magazine.
Right. So exactly. What do we expect of our police officers? And so you're going to go out Sacramento.
Very minimal.
Right. We send these people out into, Mike and I talked about last week, right, some of the worst quality of life in the country. Go right up to San Joaquin Valley. Bakersfield, Fresno, Visalia, yeah. Merced, Fresno, Modesto, Lodi, Sacramento. All the people that can't live on the coast, move inland. Looking for work. That's
a bad areas right there.
Right. And so what do you expect of your cops? I mean, so if I run from you, right, if people see me continuing to do violent things, right, and then when I'm confronted and you say, put your hands up, and I grab something out of my pocket, what do I have to do? So am I supposed to wait till you shoot at me before I shoot at you? No. No.
Well.
Can't be.
Yeah.
I've got to be able to defend myself.
But okay, so, you know, I'm not gonna. This one, I'm not gonna.
Oh, King apart, Kong, but, King Kong Bundy died. Shit.
Oh, now the wrestler. So, I just don't understand. I sometimes, I've seen like this department will pull. Well, they have one guy with taser, one guy with lethal. So they'll have non and lethal side by side.
Got it.
And they'll employ it. And you don't, there's a point where, you know, like we've talked about before is, when they're non-compliant, they're non-compliant. Things don't get better after calm down. Things don't get better after the fourth time of, let me see your hands. After, let me see your hands. Let me see your hands. Zap. He fights the taser. He goes for a gun. Bam, bam. But, you know, this, I don't get it. Why would they allow him? There's what they got to work on. What the police departments, and this is the critical moment in policing, really, is that flash to bang. When they make contact and until that person is in handcuffs or detained somehow or apprehended. That duration in there, the longer it goes, the more volatile it can be for both. They have to close that gap quicker. So either show up, boom, hit him with some kind of incapacitation foam jelly thing that block encapsulates his whole body into like a self-sealing foam, you know, and then just put him vertical or horizontal and slide him in the back of a truck and pick him away. I don't know, but that they stop this.
Back and forth.
Because that's what starts the officer. You know, he's already on a position of, he's pretty high alert. But the longer that goes, the more antsy, more unaware. They kind of go back and forth. They're shifting. I see something. I don't see something. The best time you can make a judgment call is when you first get there. Because after that, your body and all of your stuff starts going. Your mind starts seeing things. You start making things up. Someone else can play out. You can play off with somebody else's voice. You know, boy, I heard him. He's really scared. So, God, there must be something really dangerous on him. You know, so you kind of go back and forth. You got to close that gap. That time is very critical. You got to make some really rapid decisions and go with it. And, you know, and the other thing is, you know, and I hate to say this, but cops are going to get hurt. It's the nature of the business.
Right. No, no, I agree. So the question is, what's,
you just go sign another job.
What's reasonable, right? What is reasonable in terms of what we expect from our police officers?
Yeah, and that's pretty mushy.
Yeah, and I think that you know, you look at these things, and at the press conference, this is the district attorney. District attorney's name is Schubert, presented evidence that Clark was suicidal the night of March 18th, claiming that two nights before the shooting, the mother of his children had called 911 to report a domestic violence incident. A police search of his cell phone revealed that he was distraught after the incident, fearing he would go to prison, searched the internet for information about how to commit suicide, finding information about lethal drug combinations. According to Schubert, toxicology report of the police autopsy found a combination of alcohol, Xanax, codeine, hydrocodone, marijuana, and cocaine metabolite in his system at the time of his death. So you're responding to that, right? And I just think we put police officers in this
in a bad situation.
Oh, horrible situation in violent cities, right? And then this guy who's done all of this is now a total victim and a poster child, and his family's going to get some $1 million settlement. And so to me, I go back to when we stop telling the truth, okay? Look, I mean, anybody who put themselves in the position of those police officers, right? I mean, it's one thing if they shoot him when he runs, and they come back with, "Hey, only the guilty run." That's not what they did. They come around the corner in the backyard. He's there. They said, "Put your hands up." He doesn't, and as he closes with them, right, and pulls something shiny from his pocket, right, they shoot him. And he's got all that shit in his system. And it's this is their fault. Fuck that. You and I have talked about the difficult job that cops have. But, you know, like, the truth is the truth. At some point, you have to be responsible for the fact that you haven't cooperated with anything that they've said, right? And now you're going to challenge them. I don't get it, man. And then you have the mayor. Then you have the mayor apologizing.
Yeah, that's where this whole thing is going south for me. And that's where, you know, it's one thing. I get it. There's a young man who probably didn't deserve to die.
Right.
Maybe that day. Maybe not ever. I don't know what his background is.
Right.
You know, but you have a lot of different things playing out. And the problem is, like you said, is we demand a pretty shitty job from our cops. But then when they do it, what do we use? We use a freaking electron microscope
right, to
justify their actions. They didn't get that. I mean, if they had this whole information beforehand, I'm sure the outcome would be completely different. But they don't. They got to play it out real time. So what's unfair about this is what happens in 23 seconds, they can take 23 months
right, to
pull apart.
Right.
I mean, slice it layer by layer so it's so transparent. I mean, Jesus, every fraction of a second, they can get hundreds of doctors to come in and, you know, just, it's asinine what we can do. We can make, we can make saving a life look like, if we do it right, with the hindsight.
Right. No, and that's my point. I mean, there's the quick and the dead in that job, right?
Yeah.
And so at some point, right, the person who doesn't cooperate with police, right, has to be held accountable. And I agree with you, Mike. Nobody, those cops did not get up that morning thinking, yeah, let's go kill somebody.
Right.
Right? One of them's black. Right? And so it just, I don't know. I mean, I listen to stories my nephews tells. And I, and who the
yeah,
hell?
The sad thing is,
who the hell would want to be a who the hell would want to be a cop?
Shit, I was going to be one after my first enlistment, but then when I was fapped out to military police for shit 8 months, I was like, screw this. I don't ever want to do this.
And that's only talking MPs, right?
Yeah. And I was working on base, working with other Marines. Yeah. And I just, working with the sludge, the slime, that shit that it is, not that you can clean in your oven, the stuff that falls down in those little
Wait,
cracks.
Say slime again the way you just said it.
Slime.
No, that's the truth. And that's what, and you go out into a city and you're working, you're dealing with people that are crazy, crazy people, people on drugs, criminals. And that's your day. That's what you do every fucking day. And now you're chasing this guy into a backyard and he's not done what you're asking him to do. Right. So, and now all of a sudden he's closing on you with something shiny in his hand and he hasn't said shit.
Right.
And so
now the media puts up his high school graduation picture and all this other stuff.
Right. So anyway.
It's like the Michael Brown pictures. I used to love, you know, that hole went down. Remember the Michael Brown thing?
Shit, it was a joke. And it all starts with his friend saying, Big Mike, he was getting on his knees. No, he wasn't.
He was charging a police officer.
He was charging a police officer after he had reached into the police car, punched him in the head, broke his orbital bone, and fought for him with his gun. That's the truth. But we don't want to say that, because and then CNN's out there leading the charge to whip it on.
Well, that's what this is about. That's what Sacramento's going to be. People are there. Black Lives Matters now back on again.
Right.
You know?
And then supposedly the Attorney General of the State of California is going...
going to do an investigation.
Well, no, they're going to have a press conference today at 11 o'clock, supposedly.
But watch, these two cops, if I was these two cops, I'd be like nervous as shit because they need somebody to take this one, you know, and they're not in the room. They don't get a vote. These are higher powers to be that are saying, all right, we sacrifice these two guys. It'll get us stability again. I mean, what is it with these two guys? I mean, that discussion is being had. Believe it or not, that discussion was had.
Right? No. Right.
If you believe that discussion wasn't had, where they said, hey, we need to sacrifice these two guys, at least one of them. And if we get the white guy, you know, there's pluses and minuses. If we get the black guy, maybe we can neutralize the whole thing because then the black killed black. Whoa. You know, they think about this shit, man. They say this stuff. They'll never say it in public. But, the lives of these two police officers are still in the air. And they're not the one. And I get it, man. The whole if Sacramento starts erupting and starts burning, someone's going to go down.
Yeah, but God forbid we should tell the truth. Right.
Yeah, Mac. Truth is boring, brother.
Right. I know. And if you look at the paper of record in Sacramento, it's the Sacramento Bee. You know what their lead story is today?
Oh, what?
It's one of their reporters was arrested last night.
For what?
At a protest. Right. So the headline was something like.
I thought they're supposed to be non-biased.
Oh my God! Are you kidding me?
What? Journalist? Biased?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the right article.
Look, here's the headline. On Monday night, police launched an attack on our First Amendment. Here's how you can respond. That is the number one. That is the number one.
Story one thing
below the headline that says California Attorney General to announce results of his Stephen Clark investigation. Yeah.
Because he's much smarter.
Oh, he's the one that's all over Trump, too.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. He's much smarter. Oh.
So, anyway.
Mr. Comet, anytime you want to rear your little head, It's all out. I'd much appreciate it. I've been waiting for you for many years. Every time you see this stuff, the comment sounds better and better, doesn't it?
It just gets crazier and crazier. Because, like we said, the truth doesn't matter. It just screamed the loudest. It doesn't matter.
And no end in sight.
Right.
Because this is just one story.
Right.
No. You could pick dozens of stories on right now over America that are singing the same tune.
Yeah, look what happened. Baltimore's had their problems with their police force, right? Starting with that trial. And then, just a wave of anti-police sentiment. Now, I don't know how much of that was earned in Baltimore, but what you had was you had people resigning. They couldn't hire people. And the crime rate in the city went through the roof. The murder rate went through the roof. And I don't know. But
Baltimore's a bad place. Chicago.
Oh, man.
They just gave up reporting on it because everybody's like, it's Chicago, though.
Yeah.
Kind of like the...
That's what, that, what, yeah. What did the chief of police say, 2 weeks ago? When that thing with the guy who staged his own attack and all that bullshit, he said, I wish the gun violence in the city could get you as excited as the story did.
It's done now.
Right before he walked out of the press conference. You're like, damn, why you mixing in the truth like that? Why you want to be like that? Why can't we just cover this? Why can't we just cover the story?
What's up with this guy?
What's up with this guy? And again, make no mistake about it. I mean, when a young guy like that loses, his life, or a young woman loses her life like that, I mean, that's horrible. But
right.
But and nobody wants to see that. But, again, what are the cops supposed to do?
Right. What do you want them to do?
What do you want them to do? So, I mean, and I go back to that incident, and I was talking to my nephew after that. And he was starting to mind fuck himself, right? He's like, right. Oh my God, I mean, he could have shot me. I said, yeah, he could have shot your junk off, man. And he's like, I know. And you're like, it's kind of freaking me out. I said, dog, you were lucky. You were lucky. That's all it is. You were lucky. Did you do anything like tactically that you, well, no, I just tried to get myself in a position where I could get on him really quick. I said, okay. All right. So what's the lesson learned? Probably not the end of the bed, right? He said, yeah, I learned that. I said, but you know what? It's not a bad thing to be lucky. It's not a bad thing to be lucky. Hey, no. I listened to two things. Mike and I know, I've been talking about Sledge, right? And I talked about No Purple Heart, Peleliu, and Okinawa, right? That's crazy. And so I was watching a little bit more about him yesterday. And then I'm watching one YouTube thing, and then another thing comes up. And it was a guy who was part of the General Erskine, who was a commander of the 3rd Marine Division, his PSD on Iwo Jima. Holy shit, Mike. He tells the most vivid story about repelling a night attack. Like, holy shit.
General Erskine?
Yeah, this is because he said Erskine.
You don't hear a lot of Erskine anymore.
No, I mean, there's the Erskine lecture series, because supposedly he was a smart guy, but he tells a story like his buddy. He said the reason he got on the PSD was his buddy was one of the best pitchers in the Marine Corps. He was a semi-pro, he was a professional baseball player in the minor leagues, and before, in like 1944, in the fall of 1944, out in the Pacific, there were 6 Marine divisions. And they put together teams, and they had the Marine Corps World Series. And this guy pitched in the 3rd Marine Division I. And Erskine was a big baseball fan. And this is when you had, like, professional athletes, like, all over the place. And so Erskine takes a pitcher on his PSD, who's a grunt. And he says, hey, can my friend come? He's really good. And so he talks about being ashore. But he said whenever Erskine wanted information, he used to send guys to get their eyes on it. He didn't like to hear different reports through the chain of command. When he had to make a decision, he wanted to hear from somebody. And that's what they were doing when they got in this fight when they got in this fight, and he describes being out there at night, and it's pretty crazy. But I'll send you the link. You'd enjoy it because he's like 90, he's like 91 years old, and he did it, I want to say, 2 years ago. And but he spent the rest of his life working with veterans and helping Marines, and he's just a great, great American. But really interesting,
nice.
Really interesting, yeah, really interesting. The I had something else I was going to tell you. Email. Interesting discussion about what we do expect of police. I will tell you this. I think I've heard Mac talk about people trying to tell him that he should be a cop. I've been recruited to be a cop on multiple occasions, and I just think it's too crazy to be a cop unless you're going to be a help other people in the rural part of the country kind of a cop, which I think would be pretty cool. But any more in any medium to large size city in this country, it's too violent, it's too crazy. I don't know how those guys do it under that kind of pressure every day. Mike, you work with cops. I mean, how do you deal with that kind of, like, you know, 0 to 90?
Good. Families, good friends, well grounded. You know, a lot of the police officers I work with, they're well grounded people. I mean, I'm trying to think. There's probably two or three that I would say that they're like the guy that they want you to know that they're a police officer. They got the little ego going on.
Oh, really?
But the rest of them, for the most part, the rest of them are very humble guys. They just normal run of the mill. And those are the better ones. The ones that you would never pick them out as being a cop is the other guys, you know, when they're taking photographs of them with their body armor and their weapons on putting it on Facebook, social media, and they say police all over it, and every picture is a police officer. It's like, all right, you know, I get it. Okay, but, you know, in a world today, I wouldn't advertise like that.
Hello? Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah, I think what we ask from them is tough. It is tough.
Yeah, it's really tough.
Like, I could see Granbury, you know, because you can see trouble. I would think in smaller rural towns, right, troubles tends to stand out a little bit more. And because, you know, I don't know, man, the whole inner city thing, that's living on the edge every day.
Oh, yeah, that's craziness. Yeah.
And again, I mean, you're talking, when you talk to bigger cities of the country, you're talking about MI-13 or MS, yeah. And you talk about all, I mean, hello. And, you know, big drug operations, big drug cartels that own huge million-dollar blocks of revenue from the drug trade that's in those cities, and they're willing to protect it if you stumble into it. I don't envy those guys at all. Here's another question. What kind of training does Mike do with police? What kind of training do you do there?
Classified.
That's classified?
I mean, a lot of stuff. I mean, I don't do, what have I done with police? Everything.
Like, yeah, well, what do you have a specialty that you know, when somebody says, hey, man, I'd like you to come and talk to us. Do you have like a normal, like,
everything.
Muscleman 101?
No, I've talked to police on leadership, on entry techniques, IED stuff. I've talked to them about trauma and adversity, combat leadership. Everything. There's nothing really in particular, like one area, but like all sorts of stuff.
All right. Good enough. Do you have anything exciting going on today?
Today, no.
I was going to say.
Today is kind of it's freezing outside day. I was in the garage today for like 30 minutes. and I was shaking. I was so cold.
When I checked the temperature, it was like 24, I want to say. No, 29, Granbury, Texas. This is probably a couple hours ago. Granbury, Texas, 29 degrees under partly sunny skies. It's snowing in North Carolina.
Yeah, this is like, I'm waiting for it. I like, it's a beautiful day.
This might be the sign.
But that luring beautiful, like it lures you out there.
And then it smacks you. This might be the sign that the end is near, though.
Please, don't tease me like that.
One more email. Mac, I enjoyed your interview with Massart Hill today. It's amazing how one piece of advice seems often to trigger somebody. That whole thing about you're not getting over it, you would think that that would be pretty common knowledge, but it isn't. It wasn't for me, and it's amazing how that resonates in a lot of us. And then once you know that, then it's like, oh, okay, I can do this. Very, very cool. Congratulations to him. Seems like he's turning his life around. Cool having him on and being able to hear that. You know what? It is cool. And somebody sent me an email. Libby, the All Marine Radio head mother, sent me an email and said, it never gets old. And honestly, it never does. It never does. I could listen to that all day long. And again, he's one of the emails I read probably about a week ago, Mike, that came out of the blue, like, hey, I just want to say thank you and you know, what an impact you've had on this and blah, 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 blah. So again, I share with everybody. Now it's his job to touch other people's lives. So it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. All right, man. I will talk to you on Thursday.
Yeah. Yep. And then, I just so everybody knows, this week, probably Thursday, I'm breaking ground in the garage.
What does breaking ground mean? Does that mean you're pulling stuff down?
Yeah, everything's coming down this week. Today I'm building my cross-cut sled.
What is that?
For the table saw. So I'm going to do my cross-cut sled, build that today. That I used to have one, and then I just didn't take care of it, so I need a new one.
I don't know what a cross-cut sled is, though. What is that?
A cross-cut sled's for a table saw, and what it allows you to do is, so when you don't need to do your fence, so your fence is your guide from your blade, right?
Yes.
So you move the fence away, and the cross-cut usually is allowing you to, like, doing precise cutting for cross-cut cutting. So, like, when I do the cabinet panels, those long, skinny, 3.5-inch, you know, panels,
yes.
Stack two of those, make the cuts all along that 8-foot board, right?
Right.
And then just go, boop, 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 and just across the sled just kind of goes across the blade. I just push it across, just keep going back and forth. Instead of having to move the fence, do it, move the fence, do it. No, it's cross cut. So I'm going across, instead of going with, I'm going across it, the grain, or with the wood. You don't know what a cross-cut sled is?
Does that make me a bad person?
That's like basic stuff. Yeah, that's pretty close.
Cross-cut sled. I'm gonna get
not
a picture.
Not a cross-fit sled, a cross-cut sled.
images, videos.
Yeah, don't do the ones that people make. Don't ever buy a cross-cut sled.
Now, after you saying that, you know that I have to buy one. Yeah, I see what it is. But, what about the geometric slide on it and all that? Do you have that? Will you build that in? You can't do that.
What?
You're not that talented.
Do what? Don't challenge me. What are you asking?
I'm looking at one that has kind of a geometric event involved in the whole thing.
I have a miter sled for that. I don't need that.
Hmm.
Right. I have an Incra miter sled.
So the sled is actually the device that you put the wood inside of and then you move the sled.
Yeah, across the table instead of using the fence. I should make like an intricate one then. I was just going to put Pesa MDF and then two sides on it. All done. Now you're putting a challenge on me.
Well, I'm just saying, why would you go half-ass?
You got me thinking now. Okay. I'm going to make something that I need. I'll probably do a T-rack, a T-slide, or T-slot slide across the top.
See, this is...
Start to do bars,
this
clamps.
This is why...
And then do one down the face on each side.
This is why this project... By the time this Mike gets done with this, the whole house will be remodeled.
Yeah, probably.
And he knows that's true. He knows that's true.
That's scaring me right now.
Yeah, no, but this thing will morph. Okay, we've got to blow out this wall in the garage, and my office has to go. What? Yes. So, there you have it. On a positive note, my daughter just passed her permit test.
Oh, shit. Watch out. Oh, no. That was like a very stressful day in my life when same thing, my daughter passed and she got her license.
No, this is just a permit, okay?
This I know, but it's the next thing, man. Just bam, bam.
No.
Next thing you know, they're in college, Mac, and then they're calling you on the phone and you're like, when are you going to come out for Christmas? Blah, 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 blah.
Colleen, she's only 15. She's a sophomore. So we got a couple more years.
I'll remind you that when...
Hey, do you go to school?
Remember when she was 15?
Do you? And I'll be saying, it's gone by so fast. I can't believe the little...
Where's my walker?
Exactly. And who hid my hearing aid? What?
Yeah, I'm not leaving without my ARP backpack.
Where's my God? All right, enough of this. All right, have a good one.
All right, talk to her.
There you have it, Michael Musselman. Yeah, Colleen. Colleen, she's fired up. Yeah, I don't know that I taught Catherine how to drive. I think. My ex-wife did. I taught Patrick. Patrick, I punched him in the head. Yeah. He wanted to learn how to drive my Ford Ranger, which had a standard transmission. And so we're in a parking lot of a big arena. And all we're doing is making right-hand turns. And every time we go into a turn... Coming out of the turn, right? He pops a clutch, we stutter, right? And he does that over, and I said, give it some gas, man. When you come out of the turn, you got to give it some gas. Okay. He did that for like 10 more times. And I finally looked at him and I said, okay, all right, I've done enough. I've told you enough. If you do it out of this turn, I'm going to pop you right in the head. And he popped the clutch. We come out of the turn. And then, boom, from the passenger seat. Right? I got him right above his ear. Right in the head. I said, okay, let's try it again. Coming out of the next turn. I said, oh, it was a miracle that just happened. What happened? It worked. Do that. It's called gas. The car needs gas. You engage the engine, it needs gas. Understand? So the next time, it happened again. Whoosh! I said, whoa. It's a miracle that just happened in this car. Yeah. So then Catherine almost killed me in a cemetery. So she's just learning how to drive, and I thought, well, let's go drive in the cemetery. There's nobody in there. There's a little road, so we'll drive. I said, okay, just follow the road to the right. She doesn't turn the car. We go straight. Stop! We can't drive over, like, tombstones that are in the ground, so if you stop. We back up. She puts in gear. I said, okay, we want to go that way to the right. She's turning. She doesn't let the steering wheel go, overturns, and we're headed right for a tombstone and a tree. And I don't know how we didn't, like right into him. We stop. It must have been an inch from him. That's the last time I drove a car. I said, I can't do this, okay? Because you're about to get killed in this car. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, exciting stuff. Exciting stuff. Teaching people, other humans, how to drive vehicles. No bueno. All right, don't touch that dial. Yeah, there's a thing going on in Sacramento, California. I look at it as my nephew's a cop. I hear those stories that they go on. I don't know what people rightly expect. You can act every way stupid, and you're not going to get killed. That's the expectation for police now. And to me, what's going on in Sacramento? You see what they did. You see what they were told. You see what they thought. You read their statements. And at some point, if you run from the police and if you don't cooperate, you're responsible for your own what happens to you. And this should be the message. The message is cooperate with the police. And none of this stupid shit we see happen. None of it happens. If when they say put your hands up, stop. You stop and you put your hands up. Now, are there times where the police go too far? Absolutely. Right? And they've got to look at themselves. But when a city looks hard at it, and then afterwards, again, to me, when the truth doesn't matter, you have the mayor apologizing. I mean, it's, in my opinion, it's total lack of moral courage. The appropriate response is, I understand the anguish of the family. Or maybe you don't say that because you don't. Because you don't understand. I can't imagine the anguish of the Clark family. But we as a city have done our due diligence. And I stand behind the district attorney. I stand behind our police department who has a terribly difficult job to do. And as unfortunate as it may be, for some people, this is the truth. And we as a city stand behind it. That's the appropriate thing to say. Anyway, have a great day. If you know any cops, love them more, man. Have a great one. On a Tuesday. Let me tell you what you're going to hear. You're going to hear Thomas Hill, who's a retired Mass Sergeant Marine Corps, sent me an email about a week ago talking about post-traumatic winning and how he had found it, and he had been diagnosed with severe PTSD, and he had never heard somebody say you're not going to get over it. So, anywho, you'll hear from him, and we'll talk about what do we expect from police officers. So, have a great day on this Tuesday. All Marine Radio is over and done. Out. Have a good day.